Identify yourself. Identify yourself and tell us where you were born and when. How old you are.
I am Lula Bell Adams, the daughter of Mose Adams and Carrie Hayes, my mother's maiden name. I was born April 25th, 1908.
You were born here in?
In Memphis, Tennessee.
Were your parents also?
Mother and father both were born in Tennessee. My mother in Memphis. In the rear of North Main Street. And at that time, property owned by a Mrs. Bowen, the house that she was born in, it was known as Mrs. Bowen's yard. So they told me. And do I have to give the date of my mother's birth?
Sure. If you want to, sure.
Well, my mother was born June 5th. I'll track that back. It's correct, but 1890. And the day of the week was Thursday. My grandmother had a pretty good situation, you see. Her mother was born in slavery time in Macon, Georgia. And whoever they belonged to, let the house servants' children be taught by the teacher of the plantation owners. She learned to read better than just about as well as I can read now, but she pointed to her, and words that she didn't understand, she could separate them in syllables, and after I got old enough, I could look it up in the dictionary, and she would fix it in her own words as to what it meant. I consider myself very fortunate, because not only did they work, my grandfather passed when my mother was but 3 months old. And she's the youngest, the last of the Hayes family children.
Hayes was your maiden name?
Huh?
Hayes was your maiden name?
His mother's name.
Your my mother's maiden name was Hayes.
Hayes.
But she wasn't but 3 months old when her father passed away. So she didn't know anything about the name. Except in later years, we found out that he was born in Huntsville, Alabama, in that section. And they were looking for the heirs of Dan Hayes, which was his name. And I was big enough to, you know about it, because the government was buying up the land that they fixing to put the power plant down in Huntsville. So my grandmother didn't know anything about the family property or nothing, you know, because for some reason he didn't tell her about it.
Would you spell that last name for us, Hayes?
H-A-Y-E-S.
Okay. So you were close to your grandmother?
Huh?
You were close to your grandmother?
Oh, yeah. I was 22 years old when she passed.
Oh, that's nice.
What did your grandmother do for a living?
She did laundry work. She was a cook at one of the biggest boarding houses, meat cook at one of the biggest boarding houses. While my mother was growing her brother, older than her, was growing up, she was a cook at this place. She babysat at night for the Clary family and just did which she couldn't and kept her children together because her husband asked her, she told me not to ever let his children go into any of his family's homes to live. Don't let them take over. Now, what is the reason for it? I never learned because I don't guess he ever told her. Mm-hmm. But she fought the battle, and they all four lived to be grown. Before the son, the only son, was killed by getting mixed up with the wrong class of women.
So tell us a little bit about Memphis during this period that you're
of my life.
Growing up. Yeah.
I was born in the First Ward, as I told you, the year that Memphis Health Department started registering books. I'm registered in volume one. They don't have the date, but they have the month. And Mrs. Anna Washington was the midwife for all that section, white and black. Everybody was named Grandma Washington to her. I was born next door to a Jewish family on the north side of me, they facing Front Street, and a black family on the east side, because I was born at 346 North Front Street. So my birth, copied my birth certificate, shows. I lived all of my life until I was near 30, from Main Street, Miss Jackson on the front. Then we moved in the rear of Concord, which now is Parkway now, but it was Concord Avenue. And I became a member of the church in 2nd and Looney.
How old were you then?
13. I was 13 on the 25th of April, and I was baptized on the first Sunday in May of that same year, and joined Pilgrim's Rest at that time, Baptist Church. And my grandmother had joined there when she came here from, was brought here from Georgia to work with her family. I was thinking back of how she said that the people that visited Macon, Georgia described coming to Tennessee as everybody up here, and they sold what they had down there, which was, I don't know how they came by, but they sold it and came to Tennessee thinking that cotton would grow so tall you had to, you know, stand up and pick it. Oh, it was the funniest thing how she would tell me. I said, Mama, did they really believe that? She said, yeah. She said, yes. And I guess it must have been what the history books call the carpetbaggers went through there, tell them, you know, all of that stuff. And they hadn't been used to being around nobody, because now, she often told me that there were times when the war was going on, since she was just 9 years old when the Civil War ended. But she said that the lady of the house would take her to the boat at Atlanta, and she thread needles for them sewing for the Confederate soldiers. And she always was afraid of guns. She didn't want nobody to have a gun that she knew about in the house, because after I got grown, the children, they would, you know, they would hit it from mama. Mm-hmm. Mama couldn't have any guns around. But she said this lady would tell her, Caroline, we are not going to let anybody bother you. You don't have to be worried about what's going on. And if she said when if somebody's her family, when she had uncles, that the owner hired out to folks for Carver, he collected the money, see, but they did the work. But now nobody wasn't supposed to bother them. The bounty hunters wasn't hunting for them as runaway slaves or nothing. There has always been divisions and sections and things, a lot of things that history books don't give an account. It went on.
Mm-hmm. What you want to be more detailed about that?
Huh?
What the history book didn't tell that division?
Yeah, it's because some of them, I have heard people, they have told me, I mean black people have told me, that they weren't allowed to sing or to pray or nothing like that. Well, now, we were carried to the church. And what we sat in a different section from the owners of the place. Mm. My father was, he's my grandfather, not my father. My grandfather, he turned out to be a Methodist preacher because that was the Methodist system there. He could read the Bible and thing. He was taught to read by the people that owned it. But I've heard other colored people say that they didn't allow them to sing. They had to turn the pot down and all that. Well, now, there have been sections of everybody just like they are right now. Mm. Old white people weren't mean and nasty. They just had to live with the customs of the time just like you having to do right now. Mm-hmm. There are some colored people that have sense enough to know that color skin doesn't make a difference in the heart of the person. Because I had something happen to me not too long ago by one of my own that really upset me. You see, when his family, this person's ancestor, came here to Memphis from Alabama, where he was born, he started selling fuel, coal and wood. My mother was small, and he would go by when my grandmother would be at work at this large boarding house and see that they had fuel and leaving it at the end of the week she would paint. All right, in later years, he and another man opened up an undertaking shop. And my grandmother told me, said, now, as long as we all gonna die someday, said, but as long as they in business and treat y'all all right, I would rather just you use him when that time came for an undertaker, which was the decent thing to do. All right, that particular man had six sons. Didn't but two of them want to be in that business. But I have known him. We've known each other all our lives. Some were older than me and, you know, like that. But and finally, about 3 or 4 years ago, the last one passed. That was since my mother passed. And one of the nephews was an army officer. I knew the boy, the young man's father. And I'm just rambling on you, Mr. Lucas.
No, that's all right.
Uh-huh. I knew a young man's father and mother. Mm-hmm. So when he came here as a retired Army officer, after his uncle passed, I called him and asked him to come out here so that I could tell him what I had, since I don't have any close relatives living, what I had, and asked him to give me an estimation of how much more in these modern times that I would have to add to it. See, mm-hmm. I already knew I had a paid up insurance with Metropolitan Life Insurance Company, and I had and I had received a letter from them, idea of how much it would be worth. I also knew that my mother had had a straight life insurance with Metropolitan. Mm-hmm. We'd also done business with the family on 30-year endowment insurances. But anyway, I asked this fella to give me what, at his modern day prices, what I would need. Now, I let him know that I had a grave already paid for in Calvary Cemetery. Mm-hmm. And the contract, everything for the grave. And I told him the face value of the Metropolitan Insurance and asked him to give me an idea about how much, you know, I would need to add to that. Well, I don't think I did wrong.
That seems like a fair question.
I think so.
The most obvious question to ask.
Right. But here was the thing that got me upset with him. I told him that that Landau was the executor of my will. Now, what I didn't tell him, that Matt's mother had left my mother more than enough to pay for her hospitalization and all that kind of stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. But I didn't just spend it and waste it up, because, you know, I didn't know who was going to leave first. And I wasn't going to waste up her money and not have sufficient thing when Ms. Landau had left enough to do for her to do. Now, nobody asked her to do that. But her mother and father had helped my mother to bring me up to where I was grown, see. It had been a family situation, though. And when Mama got so she wasn't able to wait, Miss Landau would have, Bessie Alpin Landau would have somebody to come and pick her up every morning. She paid her. Take Mama over there to the house and sit up there with her while somebody waited on both of them. That happened. I did, of course, I didn't explain all that to him. I just asked him, you know, about my business. Sure. He writes Nat Landau a letter. And Nat was so outdone, he sent me a copy. He didn't say nothing. But he writes Nat a letter telling Nat how much insurance I had, like he didn't know. And where I had a grave, and he had checked it out, and $300 had, like, I didn't have such enough to read the contract, no, somebody had to pay for the opening and closing of the grave. I don't know where he thought. At least they did send me to school, and I tried to knowing a little bit. I'm fortunate enough to have the lawyers on both sides of Nat's family to explain anything that I need to know. Now, wouldn't I be stupid to go do something and not ask them, am I doing it right or wrong? I've done that when my mother and her sisters were living.
Right.
Because, see, they were working. And I was the one that had to explain to them what was being said and done, and God bless me with be able to have folks to tell me what to do and how to do it, how to go about it. I told this guy that, and he come writing that a little, explaining what I had and what he would have to be responsible for.
He expected to make money off of it.
That's what got him. But the sad part about it, though, he thought I was dumb enough now to go and turn my insurance policies over to him. I know them nothing. I have receipts for everybody that they buried in their family. He told Matt that his family had buried folks. Why was he telling him when Matt went to the funeral? Matt knows that Mama Reason Sidney Oates, his uncle, got this grave over there in Calvin when they opened it up to colored folk, too. Right across the road from where Nat's mother and father buried in the Temple of Israel. See, he didn't know that. And he writes him a letter telling him about what he'd be responsible for. And come telling me, you pick a color scheme like I'm giving a party now for my funeral. I said, I said, I didn't ask you that. I just have an idea about how much more I would have to add at a present day prices to have a decent funeral. I said, my church will arrange its own musical program, its own everything, because I've been a member there and served there long enough for somebody, some of them that were children when they first remember me. Now they're grown up and taken over, and they know about what I like or dislike. They all treat me up with decency, the majority of them. I said, I would need you to arrange no program for my people, and I said, whoever's back here, they'll, select whatever's going on. So he writes that and tells me, I know from our conversation that you were surprised to know that she had a second cousin. Now, what does a second cousin got to do with what I was and what she owned at that time? Because she did now, but what she owned at that time was left by her mother and father, sister and brothers.
Would you like to go back to when you were a girl growing up in this community? We'd like to ask you some questions about that.
I didn't grow up in this community. I grew up up there in the First Ward.
In the First Ward, yeah.
Could you tell us a little bit about your schooling?
Well, I attended elementary school at Grant School. It was located at that time where Hoyt Village is, at Auction and Seven. And I finished there at age 14, eighth grade. I went to Cartridge, which is now Booker T. It was then located at 2nd and Webster.
Would you mind spelling the first name of the school?
Before it became Booker T.
Before it became Booker T. Before it became Booker T, the name.
It was K-O-R-T-R-E-C-H.
Okay, good.
High school. Now, why they named it that, I don't know.
That was going to be my next question. What that name
was. I don't know. I have read some since then, but nobody ever told us why it was called Cartridge High School. So I couldn't say.
What did you and your friend...
They didn't go any further. The city of Memphis school didn't go any farther. than the 11th grade at that time. I still held my certificate. In fact, I held my cards from the first grade on out through the 12th. I still have.
I'm sure you were a good student, too.
Huh?
You were a good student, I'm sure.
It was insisted that I learn all I could. I was an honor student.
What did you and your friends do for amusement?
Well, we had baseball games between Manassas was in the county, and the county high school, then went to the 12th grade. Ms. Cora P. Taylor was the principal. But G.P. Hamilton, the one at Hamilton High School, he was the principal of the old Cartwright High School. And he is the one that organized the first band in the school system, and he taught the boys of his own free will and helped buy the instruments to teach them to play music.
And go ahead. What else did you do for amusement besides the
amusement? Went to the ball games and just go to the neighborhood theater and things, because it wasn't anything organized like it is now for children.
You want to tell us about the neighborhood theater?
The neighborhood theater was located where I lived in Main and Market.
Do you remember the name of the theater?
Idle Hour.
Idle Hour?
Uh-huh.
Idle Hour, really?
Uh-huh.
One word or two?
Two.
Two words. Oh.
Okay. Are you talking about when you were in grammar school or in high school?
Grammar and high school.
The Idle Hour was there.
Uh-huh.
Did you go to the movies often?
Did I go with?
Did you go to the movies often?
Oh, yeah. All I had to do was prove I had my lesson. And you see, we lived at 79 Commerce at that time. And the Parati family was on the east side of us. And the Winstons were on the west side of us. And across the street, the fire chief's mother, Mrs. Fitzmaurice, James Fitzmaurice, was our neighbor on the north side of Commerce Street.
These are white families?
Yeah.
Did the theater owner, was one of these families owner of the theater?
No. See, Ms. Fitzmaurice was the fire chief's mother. Mm-hmm. Now, James Fitzmaurice didn't live in the neighborhood, but his mother stayed where she was when he was growing up. And on the east side of us, on the south side of the street, were the members of the Parati family. Mm-hmm. We didn't go to their church, they didn't go to mine, see, but each respected the other's faith and religion, and they did that. Now the Rough Bunch, they were west of us down on Front Street part. And when they get along there, of course, they were very quiet and circumspect because of the people that lived there. They didn't do like some of these folks now think you have neighborhood, all that rough language and all that kind of stuff, and they got to let you know what they know how to do. I wasn't used to that until these late years, since even out here, after we moved out here, after I was grown, those people that live right around here, most of them, they're not next door there. That girl's father, or that moved there, her mother and him weren't together, but he had this child there with his wife that he had at that time. And he worked at the defense depot until he was retired. Right. Next to that, the Harders came here from Mississippi. And I guess about 44 years ago now, because Grace was 2 years old, the baby child was 2 years old. And they bought a little shotgun house. Now they have Sister and Nelson have had this house, brick veneer. And when Leanna and them tore the shotgun house down, they had the house that they in now put up.
Mm-hmm.
Can we go back to the theater that you went to? Uh-huh. Where was the theater located?
Main and Market Street.
And what?
In the first ward.
And do you remember what kinds of movies you saw there?
Yeah, on Mondays and Wednesdays, the serial pictures ran. My mother would go see them. Because you see, I was born before her 18th birthday, and she wasn't, you know. So
she's a young mother.
Yeah, a young mother. Mm-hmm. And all I had to do was prepare my lessons. And we could go to the show, see, and see that picture. But on Saturday, when the Western shows were on, my aunt's husband liked Western shows, and he would take me. I never did sit with the children when I went to the movies. Mm-hmm. I sit with the old folks, because the children made too much noise for me, and I won't.
So you went to the cereals with your mother, too?
Huh?
You went to the cereals with your mother?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, how nice.
Uh-huh. Only trouble I got into was going on a Sunday. I wasn't allowed to go to Sunday. And my friends were going to see, I'll never forget the name of the picture. Pearl White was the star. And her show was Pearl White and the Black Secret. They had some kind of secret. Thing. I don't even remember what it was now. But anyway, the last show was going to be on, and we were going to find out. My friends would tell me about it. My auntie, the oldest one that owned this house, she lived at Auction Square. Do you know where Auction Square is, that main auction?
I believe we've passed it.
Uh-huh. That's where they say the auction of slaves and slavery time. That's why they named it Auction Square. But they had it all fenced in for a while, and then when I was little, they took the fence down and put this big stone thing in the middle of it. But anyway, my auntie was living on the west side of the square. And I told Mama all of my friends were going to see the last the Black Secret, Pearl White. I had been to church to Sunday school that Sunday morning, and stayed till the morning worship service, which was out around 1 o'clock. And so when I came home and had my dinner, see, my mama was working, and she could go to Mrs. Albrin's house in the morning and stay until they served their heavy meal. And then she'd come home with my grandmother, and me would be at home. All right. I told Mama I was going down to Sissy's. That's my oldest aunt's, her mother's house, and playing the square. See, but I forgot that my mother wouldn't let false base with my eyes and things. And I went down there and told Sissy, I said, I got to have some money because I'm going to the show. Because Betty and Thelma, all of my friends, they're going to see the last of the Black Secret, and I want to see it too. She said, you know, your mother been black, you go to church on Sunday, don't you? I said, but I'm going this time. I said, I told her I was coming down to go out to play. She gave me the money, as she usually did, God bless her soul. Whatever she could do that suited me, she'd do it. And she gave me the money, and I thought I was slicking mama. See, I went and walked on down Auction Street to 2nd. Mm-hmm. And went up 2nd Street. When I got to 2nd and Commerce, I looked and see nobody out on the front porch, because I could look up there and see them sitting on the porch before I crossed the street. I ran across the street and went on, walked on up 2nd to Market. And then came down Market and crossed to Manion Street, see, and went in the theater. Well, I was such a good customer, the man that took the tickets and folks in there, they knew me. I was sitting up in the show back dancing with the children as usual. And the ticket taker came and said, you mama said, come there. Who scared me so bad? And when I got up and came on out. See, I knew my mama wasn't the clowning kind, you know, like some folks go acting on the street. She just looked at me and turned around and started headed back home. When we got to, she didn't wait to get close to me. She just looked up and then just turned around and came on back home, towed home. And when we got in front of the fire station, see, there sat all those folks that had grown up with her. The nets and all, Carrie's gonna get you. They see, they were Catholic. You went to Mass this morning, and then you went to the show to see, you know, she and Sister Hayes there, everybody called my grandmother Sister Hayes. You know she and Sister Hayes don't believe in that kind of stuff. You gonna catch them when you get home. And they was just doing that. I was so mad and scared and everything. I went on when I got to the place where we lived. There was a little fence around the front yard. I opened the gate. Mama left the gate open. I looked up on the porch and saw my grandma. I said, Mama, if you don't let her kill me this time, I will never go to the show no more. She said, but your mother told you not to go. And I don't have a word to say. And boy, my mama fanned me good. And I bet I didn't go to the show no more on Sunday until I was grown. And my half-sister, my father's oldest daughter, went to a nurses' convention in Nashville, because the colored and white nurses were separate then. They didn't have she was one of the first black nurses that the City High, Metropolitan Jones High. I have a picture of that. Because I have all of that for my own comfort and will, because I know what happened.
Did Betty and Thelma tell you how it ended?
Huh?
Did Betty and Thelma tell you how the movie ended?
I don't know.
You lost interest? Did you lose interest?
I lost interest in it. I tell you, I didn't go to a movie no more until I was growing and in Nashville before I went to on Sunday. Now I'm doing it all the time. But,
So what were the movies like the other time that you went, not on a Sunday, but?
Well, the Westerns were on Saturday, and there were stars such as William Hart and Tom Mix, and this athletic star, Eddie.
Valentino?
No. Oh, Valentina came on later. later. Yeah, you know, Valentina came on later.
Mm-hmm. Who was the athletic star?
Oh, that's Douglas Fairbanks. I was trying to think of his
name. Douglas Fairbanks Jr. Senior. Huh? Douglas Fairbanks Senior.
Yeah, but in this picture, he's known as Eddie somebody.
Did you ever see westerns that were called Bullseye or Bullet with Noble Johnson, an actor Noble Johnson?
No.
Was there music in the theater?
Yeah, we'd play a piano. Yeah, they had electric pianos back then, and the music was that's the kind of music they had at Iowa.
And did you go with your friends from the neighborhood?
Oh, yeah. But, see, I would always sit with the grown-ups. I didn't sit with the children, because they talk, and I wanted to go, you see, because you had to read.
Were the audiences very noisy at the Westerns? Were the audiences very noisy at the Westerns?
No. Not where I sit.
They sat quietly.
No, because the grown-ups were busy trying to get the sense of the thing from reading on the screen, see, and didn't have no talking sound or nothing. Mm-hmm. But you had to read it for yourself and try to get it fixed in your mind.
Was the theater large? Did it have a balcony and?
No, not idle hour, but it was just a one floor, and it was no slanted floor.
Mm-hmm. And were there blacks only in the theater, or did whites also attend that theater?
Oh, in that theater, that section, it was mostly black people went in there. Mm-hmm. And in later years, when they opened up the Orpheum, I went to the theater on Main Street, on the east side of Main Street. I didn't go to that, but two pictures, because you had to get your ticket and go around in the alley and go upstairs from the outside. Mm-hmm. And I didn't go there. But when they opened the Orpheum, well, and you could go in from Beale Street, mm-hmm, and go, you know, around and go up in the upper part of the theater. When it first opened, they had plays and movies. Mm-hmm. And that I attended regularly, but the only time I ever was on Beale Street to the theater in that section, it was under the supervision of Lucille Ryan Wood.
I'm sorry, would you repeat the name?
Huh?
Would you repeat that name?
Lucille Ryan, R-H-I-N-E. Mm-hmm. Later she married Mr. Wood, because at one time teachers couldn't be married here in Memphis. Mm-hmm. When I was in elementary school, you couldn't be married to teach school. Mm. And some wide changes have been made since I've been there.
And you were saying that Lucille Ryan, what was her position?
Huh?
Lucille Ryan, you said that she was supervising what?
She was a music teacher, and she went with that from her, Miss Lucille Washington was a relative of hers. She was a supervisor of music at the black schools. And Lucille went on up to be a teacher in the high school and a supervisor. But when she started off, she was just out of high school, and she would give little operettas from children's stories, and they would stage them at the end of the term at the Daisy Theater.
Oh, how nice.
And we could go to the Daisy under her supervision, the teachers and things, but and whenever we went down there, those people that were in that rough bunch, they didn't ever get those children in any trouble like folks do now.
But normally you wouldn't go to the Daisy because it was too rough?
Ordinarily. Mm-hmm. Because the people all around there, you know, how they live.
Beale Street, you know.
Uh-huh. It was really Beale Street.
And this is something that you decided yourself, or your mother and your uncle decided?
My mother and her mother decided. My mother married George Greenlow and George on January 21st, 1918. But he had known my daddy and my two aunties older than Mama. They grew up together in the same neighborhood. So I was fortunate when my mother did marry, that at least 1919, because when my mother did marry, I would have been 11 years old on the 25th of that April, and she married on January 21st, 1919.